Hello, and welcome to Fathoming Water. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. Last week, we talked with Julia Fonseca, who is the Environmental Planning Manager for the Office of Sustainability and Conservation for Pima County. She works with other individuals, agencies, and groups toward protecting natural resources in Pima County. One of those organizations that Julia works with to keep water resources on the landscape is the Sky Island Alliance. And so this week, we talk with Louise Mistel of the Sky Island Alliance. Louise advocates for science-based and climate-smart land management, conducts spatial analysis and mapping, and leads the spring survey and protection work for Sky Island Alliance. She focuses on improving land and resource management in the face of a changing climate and finds creative and constructive ways to collaborate with land and resource managers to better steward the resources we all care about. Louise holds a Bachelor's of Science in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology and Microbiology, and a Master's of Science in Geographic Information Systems from the University of Arizona. Louise explains how Arizona has over 10,000 mapped springs, and how the Sky Islands, the basin and range region of southern Arizona and northern Sonora, has over 2,000 springs alone. It is these springs that maintain the diversity and wildlife of the region. In such an arid climate, and one that is becoming more arid with climate change, the existence of these springs is essential to maintaining the wildlife and plant life of the region. As she explains, these special places are often where wildlife retreat during forest fires, and they support the regrowth of the forest by serving as the places where forests begin their regeneration after a fire. Many of these springs have been degraded through human uses, whether it be cattle ranching, recreation, or groundwater pumping, and restoration of these springs is often necessary. More importantly, though, is maintaining existing springs, and monitoring is one of the important steps in making sure that spring ecosystems are healthy. Sky Island Alliance does just this, along with restoration work, through a huge volunteer base of over 600 volunteers a year who go out to collect information on the springs of the Sky Islands, along with all the other important work Sky Islands does on the land. It shows the commitment that the people of southern Arizona have when it comes to protecting and maintaining our unique Sky Island biome. If you are interested in doing restoration work, Louise has the answers. Louise also spent time in Australia investigating their water issues, documented in her blog, Springs Down Under. We take a look at how southern Australia and the Sky Islands are facing similar challenges, but how the policies to protect the environment vary greatly between Australia, Arizona, and Sonora. In this episode, we imagine the possibilities of policies that could improve the way we here in southern Arizona care for water on the land. And I encourage you to do the same as you listen and learn about these unique and special spring resources. And now, Louise Mistel. So I am sitting here with Louise Mistel. You work for the Sky Island Alliance, which is a great nonprofit here in Tucson, focusing on the incredible biomes that we have of the Sky Islands. And so if you wouldn't mind giving an overview of your job and what Sky Island Alliance is all about.
Sure. So Sky Island Alliance, to start out with, for those of you who may not be familiar with the concept of Sky Islands, they're around us here in Tucson, the beautiful Santa Catalinas, our forested mountain range that is surrounded by intervening desert, grassland, and seas. And that's how we come to that name, Sky Island. And there's a great amount of biological diversity here. So all different kinds of animals and plants that are found nowhere else in the United States. Lots of different exciting ecosystems and resources here that we can all get out and see in our Sky Islands. And Sky Island Alliance works to protect those species and habitats here all around us in southeastern Arizona. Arizona. And my work is particularly focused on climate change and water. So we are in the fastest warming region in the nation down here in southeastern Arizona. And the Sky Islands are a really interesting place to be thinking about climate change because we've got all these lowland desert ecosystems and mountains that are extending all the way up to 8,000 and 10,000 feet in elevation. So there's a lot of diversity in habitat and elevation. And so I do a lot of work around protecting species and habitats in the face of climate change and thinking about how to give them the space to adapt to these changing conditions. And one of the key resources there is water. So we're in this arid desert. Large ranging mammals like mountain lions and the jaguar that we've been hearing so much about lately in the Santa Rita's need open water to drink. And lots of other smaller species need open water to live. And so as we think about this area warming and increased aridity, these water resources are becoming really increasingly important for ecosystems and for human communities that live here.
So if this is the area with the most warming, that must mean that the range of species, they don't have the full extent of the mountain anymore. It's getting less and less and less. You're seeing plants and animals having to go to higher elevations?
In some cases, yes. There is this issue of things can only go so far up in elevation and then there's nowhere else to go. And so that brings up a lot of important questions about how we preserve open space for wildlife, water for wildlife, and give them the best chance possible to adapt to these changing conditions.
So you must be focusing on springs a lot. Obviously, springs can't move up, but often they end up not being able, with groundwater pumping, are you seeing the springs diminish at higher elevations because of groundwater pumping and things like that?
So that's a really great question. We are doing a lot of work on springs, and one of the reasons that we are doing work on springs is because there's actually very little known about the state of spring ecosystems in southeastern Arizona, including how much water is at them and how persistent they are. And so one of the projects I've been working on over the last 4 years is to develop an inventory of spring ecosystems, working with volunteers. We're happy to have new volunteers. Anytime anyone's interested to get out with us and go look at these springs on the ground and find out what's going on there, what animals are using them, what plants are there, how much water is actually there, and are these sites developed for human use that sometimes that use is no longer happening, and we can work to restore those sites and help them be more resilient in the face of climate change.
Oh, like old cattle ranch springs and stuff like that?
Yep.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
Okay, well, that brings us volunteers. So Sky Island is a nonprofit, right? A 501c3?
Yes, we're a conservation organization, nonprofit, and we do an immense amount of work with volunteers. So we have 8 people on staff, but we are doing restoration and science, citizen science projects all over southeastern Arizona and actually northern Sonora as well. The full region extends down into northern Mexico. And so we need lots of hands and energy to get out and help us inventory springs, for example, monitor where wildlife is moving between Sky Islands, and lots of great restoration work around planting plants for wildlife and pollinators, removing invasives, helping water stay on the land through erosion control structures and those kinds of things.
How many volunteers do you get throughout the year?
Throughout the year, we have about, I want to say last year we had about 10,000 hours of volunteer effort that went in. And we maintain a core of about 600 folks who come and go and help us with these projects. And we've been having a lot of fun recently engaging a lot more with students at the University of Arizona, as well as students from universities in northern Mexico. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a huge volunteer effort.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So how long has the Sky Island Alliance been around?
Thank you for asking that. This is our 25th anniversary year. So we are very excited to be celebrating that and having a great time thinking about how far we've come in 25 years and what things are going to look like over the next 25 years and where we'd like to get to.
Oh my gosh, how did it get started?
There was a proposal from the Coronado National Forest, which manages many of these Sky Islands that you see around Tucson and beyond, to make the forest a recreation-focused forest. And a lot of folks thought that that was maybe not the best, highest use of these beautiful biodiverse ecosystems and started working to bring the importance and value of the biodiversity in these Sky Islands into the conversation and to try to get those values really understood by the public and the Forest Service in terms of how those mountains would be managed. And since then, Sky Island Alliance has really grown into a diversity of work, like I said, around helping protect wildlife linkages in between those Sky Islands, really getting out to restore ecosystems out on the landscape and help them be resilient and bounce back from human development and that kind of thing, and tying all these pieces together with the recent water work that we've been doing around springs.
And then do you partner now with the U.S. Forest Service? Is there a good partnership there?
Yeah, the U.S. Forest Service is a key partner for us. We work hard to find projects where we have shared values and interests, and they care a lot about having healthy ecosystems and water on the landscape for wildlife. And that's been a key driver with this springs project. The Forest Service manages a large majority of springs in southeastern Arizona, and they have a strong interest in keeping water on the land at those springs for wildlife and understanding what's going on at those sites so that they can best manage them.
I spoke with Julia Fonseca last week, and it seems that there was a great shift in values between the 80s and conflicts over land use and the way that we should use our land to the ethic that is current. Do you have any input on that? Or?
Well, certainly Sky Island Alliance, one of the things we've really done over the last 25 years is to document and develop this conversation around how important Sky Islands are in terms of the whole national and even international picture in terms of being a biological diversity hotspot. There's lots of really important ecosystem tourism that happens here. People come here to Tucson to go see beautiful birds and places in the Sky Islands. And so I think we've certainly played a part in creating that conversation around, you know, reframing from using resources to really appreciating what's out there and helping it last.
One of the questions I tend to ask people is why they think it's important for the public to understand more about water. And it would seem that for Sky Islands, it allows you to do the work that you need to do and brings in a great volunteer base.
Yeah. There's nothing like hiking through some dry, hot desert and coming upon a beautiful spring ecosystem and seeing all the wonderful plants and sign tracks and things like that of animals that have been drinking there to really help folks appreciate how important these ecosystems are. And, you know, in some cases, springs are pretty isolated and there's not a lot of other water around for animals to drink from. So that's really important. They're really these keystone ecosystems on the landscape where they're harboring an amazing amount of biological diversity, even though they may take up some tiny, tiny percent of the overall landscape. So it presents this great opportunity in terms of you can work to protect a small, special place and really have a lot of positive impact for wildlife and diversity.
So the impacts go much farther. Now, you mentioned Mexico. Mm-hmm. So transboundary work, this is a great introduction to it. So are there people on the staff of Sky Island Alliance who are more focused on Mexico?
Yes, we have a wonderful staff person, Myrna Manteca, who is working primarily in northern Mexico around wildlife connectivity issues, invasive species issues. We're working right now to document where wildlife are moving across a large highway that's in northern Mexico. So they have the same sorts of issues we do here, with, you know, highways blocking wildlife movement and needing to keep open space for wildlife down there. So
okay. But volunteers are able to volunteer here in Arizona and in Mexico as well.
Yes, we have a great time taking folks down to Mexico to do riparian restoration projects, monitoring of wildlife projects. Myrna's just kicked off a really fun project to monitor pollinators in some areas down there. She's working with students from Mexican universities, but we've also been bringing trips of students up from Mexico to do work at Aravaipa Canyon here in southeastern Arizona and various places. So a lot of intermixing of folks from Mexico and folks from the U.S., which has been really fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. And then how far south into Mexico do the Sky Islands go?
The Sky Islands extend in about halfway into northern Sonora.
Oh, okay.
Into Sonora. Okay. So
the two communities are so linked in many other cultural ways. So
that's
a great way to bring people together on the environmental level. One of the other reasons that I brought you in is you took a bit of a whirlwind trip to Australia, and Australia is facing very similar issues, greater aridity, rising temperatures, very long-term drought that lasted well over a decade. And what was your experience in Australia, and what lessons did you take away from your experience there?
After doing this work here in Arizona and Sonora on springs for a number of years, and also doing a lot of associated work around climate change adaptation projects and planning for climate change, South Australia really popped out as this analogous situation in terms of, as you said, climate and changes that they're experiencing. But Australia has for many years been a leader in terms of really recognizing climate change as a real issue and working to respond to it. And so I set up quite a few meetings with folks over there in South Australia to understand how they're managing their natural resources in the face of drought and other issues. And they have some very different relationships with their natural resources. For example, one of the really key things in South Australia, and actually the whole nation, is that they protect water for the environment and for natural places. And they value that, and they really codify that in their laws in terms of water in ecosystems supports healthy communities, and they're working to protect that. And so that's something that, after coming back from Australia, that I'm really thinking about working with our partners here in Southern Arizona, how we can think about that ethic of protecting water for the environment and start incorporating that into how we manage water here.
What were some of the experiences you had over there? The springs that were over there, how are they different than what you see here?
So we were privileged enough to spend a little time up in Darwin, which is the north end of the country opposite from South Australia, and lots of water there, lots of water. So looking at springs with giant waterfalls and that kind of thing. But they're still facing the same issues with thinking about water scarcity. And so one of the areas we were looking at was a beautiful river gorge where they're thinking about trying to build a large dam. And I had some very interesting conversations at bars and out with folks camping about how wonderful our Hoover Dam is here and how that's going to save us from climate change. And we all know that we're facing some real issues now with the way water movement and precipitation has changed. And so that was an interesting lesson to hear. We visited a gorgeous spring in outside of Darwin that is a sacred place for Aboriginals, where the women gave birth and was a rite of passage ceremony there for men. And, you know, that kind of connection between Native Americans and springs is true here in Southern Arizona as well. And so I've been thinking a lot about how we can really understand the Tohono O'odham and other nations' relationship with springs that are now located on Forest Service lands and other places where they don't own the land, and incorporate those values into how we think about springs and protect them into the future.
Yeah, that is one of the things that mirrors the Arizona situation with Australia, is the connection between Native peoples and the lands. Fascinating that they are still thinking along some of these old ideas of building mega dams, which, that's so strange that that's still in the, even though you've got the mindset of protecting water for the environment, you're still seeing mega infrastructure being built. It seems contrary to while they're buying water in South Australia for the environment,
right.
They would do that in North Australia. One of the previous guests, I think it was Glennon, mentioned that the unique part of Australia is that they identify consumptive use versus total use when you are taking water out of the river, that they are able to trade or sell their consumptive use, but their natural flow back, whether it's through irrigation return, et cetera, that they have been able to offset some of their environmental needs by splitting that water in half. And we don't do that here. Did you see, when you were talking to people about policy and stuff like that, were there any conversations about that kind of policy?
Yeah, so it's so interesting, the mentality around water here, because here it's kind of use it or lose it. And in Australia, it's much more about understanding how much is really being used, as you say, for human consumptive use versus returning to the ecosystem. And it's really coming more from this framework of how much water and at what sort of timing interval does an ecosystem need to function? And then how do we work around that to help people use it, but put water that's not being used for human use back into the system and invest water that is saved through efficiencies, for instance, through agricultural efficiencies back into the system. And we just don't have the mechanism here right now. The policy, I'm sure Glennon covered this much better than my expertise does, but we don't have the legal policy mechanism to do that well here right now in Southern Arizona. Water that's saved through efficiencies is not necessarily invested back into the environment, and we don't necessarily understand how much water we need in the system to keep the ecosystem that we so appreciate, like a riparian cottonwood willow gallery or a mesquite bosque there on the landscape.
So they're looking at very detailed issues about timing, about when certain species need an extra flow of water. Wow, so that's really guided their policy and their water, environmental water policy in Australia?
Yeah, so in South Australia, where I was visiting with various natural resource management folks with the Department of Environment, Water and Natural Resources, they have very detailed water allocation plans, or what they're called, and the environment gets its piece of the allocation, and then there's managed allocations for various human uses. One of the things that I found really interesting in terms of thinking about springs here in Southern Arizona and creeks that often are fed by groundwater, these water allocation plans actually develop buffers around these ecosystems where you cannot drill a new well. And so they're really thinking holistically about the connection between groundwater and surface water and how to really functionally keep the water in the ecosystem as much as possible.
So coming back to Arizona then and the Sky Islands, the role of the Sky Island Alliance appears to be finding out this type of information that can help guide policy changes possibly in the future.
Yeah, so it's really hard to decide where to protect ecosystems and where to restore them and how to do that if you don't even know what's out on the landscape. And so we're really working to fill that gap with these on-the-ground spring inventories that we're doing with volunteers. We started this work, it came out of some very collaborative climate change adaptation planning work that we did with the whole community of natural resource managers here in southeastern Arizona. And so that need was really identified by this whole big group of people who want to work to keep water on the landscape. But if you don't know how much water is at a site or what state it's in, you don't know where to start to prioritize and do that work.
What are your major partners with Sky Island Alliance?
So we work with federal, state agencies, local agencies like Pima County. State agencies include folks like Arizona Game and Fish, Arizona Department of Water Resources. Federal agencies include folks like the National Park Service, who are doing lots of work on springs outside of town, the Forest Service, as I mentioned, the Bureau of Land Management. We work with USGS, who helps us with the science side of things. We work with the University of Arizona and folks up at the Northern Arizona University. And then we do quite a bit of work with private landowners on their land doing restoration work and helping them understand what ecosystems are on their land and what species. And that's really our main collaborator in northern Mexico because the land is primarily private, so it's a little different working situation there.
Oh, and I can see that being some of the most important work just because private landowners may not have any idea that they have special species or special ecosystems on their land.
Sure. And we've just dabbled a little bit in spring inventories in northern Mexico, and it's been really fun to see the connection that these ranch owners have with their springs and the strong desire they have to support their livelihood, but also to help them be healthy for wildlife and plants that are living there.
Julia Fonseca brought up the fact that the conversations with ranchers have been some of the best in terms of figuring out how water moves across the land and things like road grading, all these basic things that you would think wouldn't have as much of an impact actually have a huge impact And so teaching people about how their private land can be managed better is such an important part of it.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting. So in the U.S., we're working closely with the Forest Service at these springs, and they often don't have a good idea of the history of what's happened at a particular spring. But at these ranches in northern Mexico, we can often get a very rich story of the history of a spring and how much water has been there and that kind of thing, which is really amazing.
Oh, interesting. So the memory, the institutional memory may not be there with the federal organizations, but that you have that institutional memory with farmers and ranchers and the connection to the land. What projects are you working on right now, primarily?
So Sky Island Alliance is just wrapping up a two-year effort in the Santa Cruz River Basin to survey springs on the landscape. We just put a report out that's available on our website, and you can check that out and see pretty photos of the various springs we've been to and photos of springs that need some restoration help as well. And part of this project was also, we've been working with, again, that big group of partners and managers who are working on spring ecosystems to develop a restoration handbook for springs in Arizona. One of our key partners there is a wonderful organization called the Spring Stewardship Institute out of Flagstaff. And as we did this restoration work at springs over the last few years and to try and help some of these systems become more resilient to climate change, we realized that there's very little guidance around how to think about restoration at these sites and how to proceed. We're also working in this context of climate change, so we don't want to be trying to restore it back to something that can't persist. So thinking forward into the future in terms of restoration, we're really excited about this restoration handbook and hoping that it can be a good tool for managers here in Arizona to really take care of these spring ecosystems. We've also got a new project related to our springs work that has been really fun for Sky Island Alliance staff and the volunteers involved, called Adopt a Spring. So if you think about these spring inventories, we're just going out once and it's a snapshot in time. But if you want to understand how springs are responding to climate change, how they're recovering following restoration, you really need longer term seasonal kinds of information. And so we've got teams of volunteers now trained up in our Adopt a Spring monitoring protocols, and they're going out to some very cool spring sites around southern Arizona each season and taking some information on the species that are there and really importantly how much water is flowing at the time. So that's a project we are planning to be continuing for years to come, and hopefully we'll get lots of really helpful information about what's going on at these sites.
That's a great idea. When I worked with Park Service, it was for the monitoring program, and the importance of monitoring cannot be understated, because just one snapshot, it could be a drought year, it could be a wet year, you don't really know until
right. You
see it over time. That's an incredible program. I would assume people, if they're interested, can just go to the Sky Islands Alliance website and register. Okay. I like to, because there's students listening, kind of overview people's education.
Mm-hmm.
You had an undergrad in ecology and evolutionary biology?
Yes.
So a lot of the people I've talked to have gotten a hard science background, mm-hmm. and then have moved on to more planning, policy, and in this case, environmental work. So if you want to talk about, how did your education help you get to where you are today?
I am truly a scientist at heart, and I loved doing my ecology degree at the University of Arizona, but I kind of always felt like I really wanted the science to be for a purpose, and I was fortunate to find Sky Island Alliance really early in my career, and it was just the perfect fit in terms of really being a bridge between really important scientific work, but getting that work into management decisions and decisions about where and when we protect resources for wildlife, water for wildlife, movement corridors for wildlife, all those sorts of things. So I always just had this itch to really make sure that the science side of things was feeding really directly into good decisions that help these ecosystems persist so that we can all enjoy them.
And then you also have a master's in GIS information systems.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that help guide your work?
Geographic information systems, another one of my loves. You know, mapping things is so important to see what's going on a landscape and to understand where things are, particularly with the springs effort. We need to know have a good sense of where these ecosystems are before we go out looking for them. And we need to see how they fit into this bigger landscape context. And GIS is a really powerful tool for that. But overall, I'm really excited about the power of GIS and conservation for helping people visualize what's going on. You know, we're here in Tucson. I'm talking about this big area that people maybe don't have a good picture in their head of what that looks like. And so there's a lot of power in spatial visualization through mapping to really help people see what's going on. Where is that wildlife corridor between two sky islands? Where are the springs in that wildlife corridor? And then it's a really important tool for us to do conservation planning. So understanding where are the highest priority places to do restoration work, to protect corridors, which springs should we focus our efforts on?
Now, you mentioned kind of going back about how groundwater pumping, and in Arizona, we have a bifurcated surface water, groundwater management here. And so when you're talking about exempt wells here in Arizona, people can drop a well in a lot of very sensitive places. They're private wells. There's certain areas that are more protected than others, obviously, government lands or in the active management areas. But are you seeing an effect of groundwater wells in near springs in your work?
So that's a great question that we've actually been trying to answer. And it's a tough question to answer because, just as you said, there's not a lot of good data on how much water is being pumped out of various wells. And I think that just goes back to this real need to start understanding the spatial relationship between where springs are, how much water is at them, where wells are, how much water is being pumped out. But it's a real question in terms of protecting these systems. And folks like the Forest Service is thinking about it because they have a whole big boundary that's surrounded by private land and other lands where people can be doing, you know, whatever they're doing with their wells without the Forest Service necessarily knowing what's going on. And, you know, these systems are all different in terms of whether they're fed by shallow groundwater, whether they're fed by very deep, long-term flows underground, where that sort of rain recharge is moving through and coming out at a spring. And so there's a lot of work to be done, for sure, to understand all of that better, to really protect these systems effectively. But certainly caution is a good principle in terms of understanding that, you know, these are groundwater fed systems. And if we continue to pull groundwater out from under them, you know, some of them may dry up.
And how long has the specific springs program at Sky Islands been underway?
Yeah, so we've been doing these spring inventories for about 4 years now. There's 2,200 springs in southeastern Arizona where we're working around the Coronado National Forest. And
2,200?
2,200.
Wow.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
It's fantastic. And we've been to about 180 over 4 years. So there's a ways to go. And we're fortunate we just received some funding through a partnership with the Arizona Land and Water Trust to keep doing this inventory work over the next 5 years or so. So lots more volunteer opportunities, but a long ways to go in terms of really getting a handle on what's going on at these sites. And just as another mind blower, Arizona is the second driest state in the nation, but has the highest number of map springs. It's just over 10,000 map springs in the state of Arizona.
Fascinating. And really, our wildlife wouldn't exist here without that. That is really underpinning the wildlife of Arizona, isn't it?
They're absolutely a key resource for wildlife and a key, as I said before, key biological diversity hotspot. So helping species spread out across the landscape. We've seen some really interesting things through these spring surveys. One of them is we've been doing surveys just over the last year in areas that have burned. So fire, I'm sure folks have heard about our changing fire regime and climate change, and it's becoming a bigger issue. And there's really no information about how fire is affecting these spring ecosystems. But we're thinking that they may be really important refugia, where things don't burn as hot and that kind of thing. And we're seeing in the Pinaleno Mountains, where there's been some big fires over the last few decades, that springs up on top of the mountain are some of the only places where spruce is regenerating out of. So really interesting doing in terms of thinking about what it means for these springs to be biodiversity hotspots as we adapt to a changing climate?
I was especially thinking more about botany and plants. You tend to think about the big mountain lions mm-hmm. moving across, but yeah, just the individual plants themselves have such dependence on spring resources, which of course underlies everything else. So right now you're getting snapshots in time of all these springs, just trying to catalog them. You've got a team of volunteers that are starting monitoring work, but it sounds like there's a huge amount of work to do in the future. So what do the other staff at Sky Island Alliance work on?
So we have a restoration director who is leading all of our restoration efforts in the U.S. and Mexico, thinking about pollinators, keeping water on the landscape, and wildlife resources. I mentioned our staff person working in northern Mexico, Mirna, on wildlife connectivity and various projects down there. We have another staff person who works on wildlife linkages, primarily in the U.S. We've been doing a lot of visible work recently on the wildlife overpass up at on Oracle Road, combining our linkage documentation and advocacy work with some restoration work on either side of that overpass to help it be functional so wildlife can move through there. And then we've got, I have a colleague who's doing a lot of the field work for the Springs project right now. And we have another field person who's helping Carrie Ann implement lots of these different projects at springs and streams for restoration around the region.
And then with coordinating volunteers, is it up to each project director to coordinate volunteers?
Yeah, we found that the folks who are leading the projects, you know, can answer questions the best with volunteers and really help keep that relationship going. And so we've kind of got different folks managing volunteers. But there's wonderful resources on our website to see all of the upcoming volunteer opportunities. You can sign up to receive all our volunteer announcements and look at the calendar of upcoming events and get all your information in one place to start out.
That's fantastic. With your experience working with Sky Island, with your background in ecology and GIS, and then your experience over in Australia, if you were to craft a single piece of policy, what do you think would be the most important? What would you like to see on the land? What would be the most important piece of policy you could imagine?
Wow. Well, I think that we absolutely need a tool to help us articulate and quantify water for the environment. You know, in Australia, there is actually a national law that does that. I don't know that that will happen here. And so we're working hard to find lots of little tools along the way to protect individual sites. But seeing that ethic in place in Australia and the great benefits of that was really amazing. And I'm hoping we can work toward building that here in Arizona and beyond. Well, and it's just so critical that we recognize the link between healthy human communities and healthy ecosystems, which need water in them. And ideally, we get to a point where that is in policy and law so that it's really protected. But I think starting with really making that connection with local communities here in Tucson and around southeastern Arizona and building from there will be really important.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, I would just say that spring ecosystems are just really amazing. I've been so honored to do this work over the last 4 years and to work with hundreds of volunteers that helped us really document these ecosystems. It's been amazing to see all the interest from the agencies that really do want to protect these systems as well, and just the overall interest in these really cool places on the landscape. And so we invite folks to come out with us and get a taste of it yourself and think about what water means to you in terms of your quality of life. And we will continue to do this work to give a voice to springs in policy and management decisions and try to keep them out there on the landscape.
Thank you so much to Louise Mistel for sharing her work with Sky Island Alliance on the Springs program with us. If you are interested in volunteering, you can check out their webpage at skyislandalliance.org. We learned a lot in this episode about the incredible spring ecosystems of the Sky Island region. It was fascinating to once again touch upon Australia and learn about how they provide water for the environment. And yet they still look to develop major water infrastructure to provide water in their wetter regions. It just shows how we are still living in an era of large water project fetishism. We are starting to unwrap in this series the conflict between how we as a global people are awakening to the shared needs of water among the whole environment and the policies and linear thinking that keep us tied to past practices that undermine the needs of the environment. We will continue to unwrap this conflict further by letting our guests tell their stories and share their experiences working in the world of water management and policy, including climate policy. I am delighted to have more voices from the environmental sector on Fathoming Water. In 2 weeks, we will have Lisa Shipek on Fathoming Water. Lisa has served as the executive director of the Watershed Management Group since 2006. Lisa has expertise in developing training programs for professionals, developing environmental education programs for adults and children, and collaborating with a diverse range of partners to implement community-based environmental projects. Lisa directs fundraising, strategic development, and outreach activities for Watershed Management Group. She manages several of Watershed Management Group's programs, including the unique Tucson Conserve to Enhance program, which links individual water conservation savings with local river restoration, and Watershed Management Group's Water Harvesting Certification program that trains professionals from throughout the United States and abroad. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Science and a Master's of Arts in Latin American Studies. Lisa believes low-tech, community-based solutions can solve today's most pressing environmental challenges. Through her work with Watershed Management Group, she is particularly interested in developing environmental programs that improve quality of life in urban areas. I look forward to speaking with Lisa, as well in future episodes we will be featuring highlights from the University of Arizona's Water Resources Research Center's upcoming conference on March 21st, 2016. And in fact, Lisa Shipek will be one of the speakers at this conference. So keep checking back for new episodes at fathomingwater.com in 2 weeks. Fathoming Water is produced in Tucson, Arizona at KXCI Community Radio and engineered at Baby Gas Mask Records. Thank you to the University of Arizona's Water Resource Research Center for their support of Fathoming Water. Thank you to Chris Levesque for our theme music, A Walk in the Wasteland. And thank you for listening. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey.